Good afternoon. This is Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. On Lake Effect, we've looked at various issues surrounding mental health, such as trauma, substance abuse, and the need for mental health nursing and other professions to help the Milwaukee community.
Often, a lot of the attention when it comes to mental health concerns goes to adult mental health issues. But one psychologist is encouraging parents, teachers, and caretakers how to look out for a child's mental health.
Dr. Stephen Dykstra is a clinical psychologist with the Milwaukee Behavioral Health Division. He's the director of the County Trauma Response Team. Part of his job is going out into the community after a traumatic event occurs to ensure youth and family have the support they need to move forward.
However, Dr. Dykstra says there are everyday practices that can help ensure a child's healthy development in their daily experiences. He begins by explaining to Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski how it is important to first be aware of children's mental health in relation to their overall development.
We're talking about children's mental health a lot of times when we're talking about other things, and we may not realize it. Children's mental health is very closely linked to ideas and thoughts about child development, about children just growing up healthy, feeling safe, having healthy relationships, being successful, moving along in the right direction. Those are all ideas and concepts that strongly underlie mental health. In adults, it's true as well, but it may be more dramatically true in children to say that mental health is not just the absence of mental illness. You can have a mental illness and still, in a sense, be mentally healthy. You can be mentally unhealthy or physically unhealthy, for that matter, and not really have much of a diagnosable illness. Sometimes things just aren't coming together and going well. Sometimes people just don't feel good. Sometimes children aren't developing in the way we would like. And that's really at the core of children's mental health.
So just to have some of examples, what kind of signs can children exhibit if they're struggling with mental health issues that go outside of the development milestones that parents or teachers are looking for?
When we talk about developmental milestones, a lot of times we're talking about things like walking, talking, counting, being able to do certain things physically. And along those same lines, we hope to see children who are moving out and exploring their world, who are forming relationships with other people, who aren't so afraid or worried that they don't talk to anybody but their caretakers, that they feel uncomfortable or frightened whenever they leave the home. We want to see kids who are striking that balance between their own interests and their own needs and fitting themselves in with the rest of the world. You know, in the most common sense, those are children who can go to the playground and can share time, can get their turn on the slide without having to knock other kids off the slide, but at the same time not being bullied by other children either. Those are all signs that children are developing in the way we like. We like to see children who may react to disappointments or to mild stresses or losses in their life, but don't overreact. Children who may defend themselves, may lose their temper from time to time, but can return to a calmer, more rational pattern of behavior fairly easily, as opposed to children who get angry and stay angry, who get angry very, very easily. It's very hard to tell what's making them angry. They leave everybody around them on pins and needles all the time. Those are signs that something may be wrong.
And do you find that it's difficult for a parent to know and recognize that any of these behaviors might be outside of the norm and then seek help? Do you think that parents are given enough information and resources on what to look out for?
Well, let me start by saying it's hard. It's hard for me, and I have lots of training and lots of experience. Very oftentimes we wonder if this is a point of concern. I would say that if parents are concerned, if it's in the back of their mind, if it's a question they're asking themselves, it wouldn't be bad to talk to their pediatrician or to seek, if the child is school-aged, to talk to somebody at school. I would be very interested in knowing, is my child like this in other settings? Are they like this at their friends' houses? Are they like this at school? Just as school should be wondering if the child is having problems at school, do they also have these problems at home or elsewhere? We're always more concerned when a child shows difficulties in development or the challenges of growing up in multiple settings as opposed to just one setting.
So what are those key components or the three pillars of children's mental health?
When I talk about the three pillars, I'm talking about the things that form the backbone of healthy development and therefore the healthy early stages of mental health that get kids off on the right foot. And while everything contributes to children's mental health, every experience, every skill, everybody they know, everything they do, it does appear that there are three things that hold a larger position. And the first among these is a sense of safety and security. We want kids to feel safe and secure. That looks very different when you're 6 months old versus when you're 6 years old or 16 years old. But that as kids grow up, and particularly when they're young, that they have a sense that the world is a safe place, it's going to take care of them, that they don't have to always be scared, always be worried. And if something does go wrong, there will be people close by who are going to protect them and make it better. Close behind that and very related to that sense of safety and security is relationships. Starting out with that first primary relationship with a small number of intimate caretakers and then expanding to our first friends, more family members, neighbors, people we just meet once, that we're able to establish relationships and benefit from those relationships, that knowing people is a good thing in your life, that being around people is an enjoyable thing in your life. Not all the time, not everybody. Doesn't mean you can't be a little socially anxious once in a while, but that a child has an opportunity to form important, meaningful, supportive relationships. In concert with all of that, then, and happens very much in the development of relationships, is the development of language, that kids can use language, can receive language, can produce language. And then as they start to reach school age, they start going through the steps necessary to be able to read. Reading is language on steroids. Children who develop good language skills are better positioned to be good or better than good readers when they get to school. And children who read well and master the many challenges of reading and writing are in a good position to be successful at school. If school goes well for you, you're in a much better position to overcome the challenges that are going to come your way. If you're not successful at school, if school is a constant stress on you, if reading is difficult, for instance, it's going to make the other challenges of your life harder to master. And children sometimes get overwhelmed. In a sense, they get behind the curve. And developmentally, they have a hard time catching up.
Do you find that in today's modern age of technologies and children having their own tablets and cell phones so young that the language development is hindered through that if they're not physically reading a book either by themselves or if their parents are taking the time to sit down and read with them?
There's a lot of concern about that. There's a lot of research that's being done. It's coming out all the time. The concerns seem to focus around the difference between reading in isolation versus reading in the context of a relationship. And when we're talking about children who don't read yet, who are being read to, there's a real difference between, say, sitting with a book that plays to you off of a tape or off of a recording versus sitting with somebody on their lap or next to them who's reading a book, pointing things out. It gives us a chance to, you know, if we talk about the pillars, it gives us a chance to connect relationship to language. So that's doubly strong. It gives a sense of safety and security while you're sitting with a trusted adult. So all of these pillars are being enhanced at the same time and being connected to each other in a very deep and important way. So that inherently has more value.
And even if all the pillars of language, relationships, and safety go well, perfectly safe, what kind of things can still develop? Because it's a constant lookout and struggle.
Things can go wrong. Things can go different than the way we would hope they go. In some cases, we can see why. Trauma, repetitive stress, tragedies of those kind can sometimes befall a child or their entire family in a way that pushes their development off in a different direction. If we were talking metaphorically, it's kind of like a car going in the ditch. Even good drivers can go in the ditch. In other cases, sometimes it's just, in a sense, in the cards. You know, we have children who are born with certain personality traits who may be unusually anxious, who maybe have a pattern of behavior that sometimes is described as ADHD. Some kids get to school, and in spite of the fact that people have read to them countless hours and expose them to a wealth of experiences, just because of the way their brain is wired, reading is going to be exceptionally difficult for them. In those cases, it's always important that we calmly and without shame or judgment identify these things as early as possible and get the best kind of help and support and intervention that we can.
Now, with adolescents, behaviors are changing, hormones are changing, and people can often dismiss certain patterns or acting out as like, oh, they're just being a teenager. But how important is it to identify not only adolescents maybe being self-aware that perhaps they have a mental illness, but also parents engaging with them and the community at large?
In my work at BHD, and I've been with the mental health division for over 25 years and had the opportunity to meet thousands of children and thousands of families. One of the most important things I see is communication, that if somebody knows a child and has concern about that child, sees something that worries them, that they share that concern with the caregiver, that parents who are concerned are talking to folks at school, that if we are concerned that we're seeking the help of professionals to get some guidance as to whether things are more or less serious. You know, parents don't hesitate, and rightly so, to bring their child to the doctor because they think they might have an ear infection or they're worried about that rash. We don't have any shame about that. But issues of mental health have more shame and stigma attached to them, and so we don't ask. We wait until it's clear, until it's obvious. It would be better if we didn't. It would be better if we talked to each other, if we shared those things. And one of the things we can do as a community is be more open to those conversations, have less stigma, less shame. If people do talk about these things, they're going to find a lot of people who nod their heads and say, I went through something similar.
In a community such as Milwaukee and working with the Behavioral Health Division, what kind of things as a city affect children's well-being and mental health as they grow up in the city, whether they're from the north side, south side, the different experiences that a lot of people in Milwaukee are privy to because of simply where they live? And we're a unique city in that where you live can deeply affect your childhood.
Yeah, as much as we all wish it wasn't true, the fact of the matter is where you live changes the likelihood that certain unfortunate, bad, what we might call traumatic things could happen, either to you directly or to the people around you. And one of the things we have to keep in mind is all of these incidents reverberate through our neighborhoods and our communities like ripples on a pond. Far more people are affected in deeper ways than we previously understood. For every front page tragedy that we read about that directly affected 4 or 5 or 10 or 15 people, there are dozens, hundreds of others who are more worried tonight, who are feel less free and less secure tomorrow. It's a major focus for us at the county and at BHD to try to recognize that, to be more attuned to that. We've always been, I think in the course of my 25-year career, we've always been conscious of the direct consequences of serious, severe traumatic events. But until recently, we haven't been nearly as mindful of those ripples on the pond and the way those things affect communities and neighborhoods and change the way people live. Going back to some of our earlier conversation, that makes it harder to form relationships, makes it harder to feel safe, just erodes that sense of security in a way that has a lasting effect on people.
If children or parents decide to reach out, what are some of the resources they can tap into?
Well, as I've said before, school-aged children, we can talk to the people at school. Even if we don't think of them as mental health experts, they have lots of experience with thousands and thousands of children. It's really interesting when, and it's a lot of what has gone on with me over the years with my work at BHD. I sit down with a mother or parents or caretakers who have really deep knowledge about this one child, and I bring my broad knowledge about thousands of children, and together we figure things out. So they can, you know, talking to people at school, speaking to their pediatrician, depending on the severity of the situation, people may be seeking a referral to a mental health professional. If it's an emergency, if it's a crisis, then call one of the crisis lines at Milwaukee County. They can call us at the Mobile Urgent Treatment Team. And if we're not the right people to help them, we'll help get them to the right folks. in this modern age of everybody having a different kind of insurance and insurance changing all the time, having that insurance card close by and using that phone number on the back of the card, even if you got to push 2 and then push 4 and listen to the computerized recording, take the time and do it. Get to somebody. They'll almost always be helpful to you.
Well, Dr. Stephen Dykstra, I'd like to thank you for coming in and talk about this today.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Dykstra is a clinical psychologist with the Milwaukee Behavioral Health Division. He's the director of the County Trauma Response Team. You can find out more about the 3 pillars of children's mental health and find additional links to resources at WUWM.com.